Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back to the show. It's your host, Danny Haifong. I'm in Beijing, China, and I'm so glad to welcome to the show Victor Gao. If you don't know Victor Gao, he is the vice president of CCG. He's the former interpreter to Deng Xiaoping, and he is a prolific commentator who frequently participates in Western mainstream media to help tell the truth about China. Victor, it's great to see you again.
Thank you very much for having me. Glad to see you.
Yes, well, let's talk about first Iran, because that's been going on for 8+ weeks now, or the war continues. There's a ceasefire. Now, recently, a vessel associated with China was seized by the United States in the region outside of the Strait of Hormuz. And the Trump administration, Western mainstream media are saying that it was a gift from China that was seized. And now this blockade that the U.S. has been waging has been largely associated with China in terms of why the U.S. is doing this. What's your message to the United States and to the world about this blockade, the continuation of this war, and China's position in it?
Well, first of all, the war launched by the United States and Israel on February the 28th has been a war of aggression. And Iran is fighting a war of resistance against foreign aggression, which aims to destroy its sovereignty and territorial integrity, or, as President Trump threatened, even to blow them back to Stone Ages. This is truly a very much of an overstatement, and it should never be allowed to be implemented. Secondly, I don't think President Trump or this government really knows what they are doing. You know, why they launched this war, what's the ultimate goal, and what is the pathway leading to the execution of the war, achieving their goal, if there is any goal. And President Trump seemed to be very much surprised when Iran closed off the Strait of Hormuz. He should not be surprised if he really wanted to launch a war against Iran. And the fact that the United States is now imposing a naval blockade on the at least a partially closed Strait of Hormuz is something very unusual in human history, because I don't think President Trump knows what he wants to do, whether he really wants to see the petrol price, the price of gas going through the roof, causing tremendous amount of pain to the American people or not. So I think we still need to see what's going on. I'm afraid the greatest certainty now in the world is the uncertainty of the United States under President Trump. And the greatest predictability now is the unpredictability of President Trump and his government. So I think it is completely irresponsible to kind of hold the whole world hostage to launch this kind of one-term military attack on a sovereign country, a member of the United Nations, regardless of the shock that it is generating in terms of the energy crisis, as well as the economic crisis, which I'm sure is already happening, but the data thereof probably will not be available until probably 1 month or 2 months or 3 months afterwards. And eventually, if this war is not ending soon, it will lead to the outbreak of an unprecedented financial crisis. So I hope President Trump and his government really know what they are doing, and I hope they will stop before it will be too late.
What has been China's role in this war? There's been a lot made about China's assistance to Iran even before the war. There have been reports that are hard to verify about China, even military assistance, technological assistance, data like satellites and whatnot, satellite technology. But I'm curious on what your assessment of China's actual position in this war is, how it has handled itself, and how does it contrast with that of the United States?
Well, first of all, from day one when this war was started, China condemned the war. China called for de-escalation and tried to put a stop to the war right away. And the Chinese position has been consistent throughout the past 2 months or so. Secondly, China's position is also very clear. China does not supply arms to any country which is at war. And Iran is at war, even though it is fighting a war of resistance against foreign aggression. So I think the Chinese position is really carved in stone, and it will not deviate from this position of not supplying weapon to the warring party. But on the other hand, I think Iran has already expressed their gratitude for the Chinese help, in the sense that they value the moral support that China has been given, not only at the United Nations Security Council, but in the world at large. The Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi kept calling all the other relevant foreign ministers from more than 20 countries to urge the need to stop the war as soon as possible. Now, it is also very important to know that President Trump actually also thanked the Chinese government for its role in bringing Iran to the negotiation table when President Trump announced the two-week ceasefire. So I think all this indicates that China is very much active behind the scene. China does not want to grab the limelight, but China is really putting all its weight to urging for peace and urging for an end to the war. Now, I have also read about the speculations about the Chinese supply of weapons, for example. Let me be very brief. Talking about this satellite service, China is one of the biggest supplier of satellite data and services to any country which is willing to pay. And China and Iran did have satellite services agreement signed up way before the outbreak of the war. So if anyone in the world believes that the United States should put a stop to the normal and commercial satellite services between China and Iran, which were signed up before the break of the war, outbreak of the war, I think they are indulging fantasies. These services are very much commercial and normal, and it's not militarized, for example, not weaponized. As to what use Iran can put these satellite data to, that's up to them to decide. That's number one. Number two is that someone is saying that China supplied shoulder-mounted anti-air missile through Pakistan to Iran. My view is very simple. China and Pakistan have very close military cooperations. We jointly produce fighter planes, and in terms of other conventional weapons, China and Pakistan really talk with each other constantly. So it's not surprising if China will supply some kind of conventional weapons to Pakistan, even including the shoulder-mounted anti-air missiles. But once these weapons reach Pakistan, whether Pakistan will keep them inside Pakistan or ship it to another country, that's none of China's business. It's up to Pakistan to decide. But if anyone believes that because the United States and Israel started the war against Iran on February the 28th, China should be prohibited from engaging in normal military-to-military cooperation with, for example, Pakistan, that's indulging in fantasy.
Victor, should China be worried about what's going on with Iran? Because I've been seeing a lot of commentary of late, especially on social media, where a lot of geopolitical analysts and others, journalists, are talking about the consequences of this war. One of which is, of course, in the realm of energy. And some have noted that Iran is a key energy partner of China. And a lot of the Trump administration's overall foreign policy appears to be targeting the choke points of both trade and, of course, the flow of energy. So does China have a reason to be worried about this? And if so, what is China doing about it?
Well, China always cares about its energy security. As a matter of fact, I've been the chairman of China Energy Security Institute for a couple of decades already. And I personally care about this tremendously. However, allow me to make the worst case scenario. If, for example, you believe that there will be no single drop of oil to be shipped to China from abroad, or no single cubic feet of natural gas to be shipped to China, that will be the worst scenario. I think China's energy security will still survive. Why? Because if you assume the worst, you know, no import of crude oil, no import of natural gas, piped or liquefied, for example, China has one thing they can dig deep into, that is coal. China has the largest coal reserve in the world. And right now, many of the coal-firing generators have been mothballed, but they can be put back to use immediately. And I think China can really gain a lot power, electricity, if they increase significantly the use of coal as a percentage in the energy mix. That will not be good for environment, of course. It will not be good for everyone in the world. But if China is forced to the corner, that is, I think, the pathway China need to go to. Further, if you notice that while China uses up to about 800 million tons of crude oil every year, China's domestic production remains at about 200 million tons for many years already. However, I believe if the worst really happens, China can really significantly increase its domestic production of crude oil by a very large margin. Now, how much they can increase on top of the 200 million tons of crude oil China produces on a regular basis, I do not know. But minimum, I think, another 100 million tons or so, if not more. That means even if really the worst hits China, I think China will hold the ground and China will shift to coal, increase the domestic production of crude oil, and then really go maximum in terms of solar and hydropower or the wind power. So I think China is probably better positioned than any other country in terms of not only protecting its energy security in normal days, but also when the whole thing falls apart and China really need to be completely scrambling to procure the best and most affordable source of energy for its economic development, and that will be coal.
All those are really great points, Victor. Now I wanted to center in on the Strait of Hormuz, because it seems that this war has become almost entirely focused on the Strait of Hormuz, especially from the United States side. Iran has asserted control over this key waterway that ships 20% of the world's oil. And I wanted your assessment and China's overall view of this, because on the one hand, we hear reports that Iran is settling a lot of these tolls in Chinese yuan, which is a pretty big move if true. And on the other hand, China's official position has stated that it wants the waterway completely opened, but it hasn't condemned Iran for directly for asserting control. So how can we clarify, if you could, China's position on this and the overall impact that you see the war moving toward the Strait of Hormuz as the focal point being?
Well, let's put the facts into proportion because before February the 28th, before the war started, the Strait of Hormuz was open for free navigation. No problem. No one wanted to close it off. And out of their desire to protect its civilization, to prevent being blown back to Stone Ages, as President Trump threatened, they of course want to do whatever they can to defend itself, because the war against Iran is a war of aggression, and Iran has full authorization to do whatever they can for self-defense. Now, whether the closure of the Strait of Hormuz or the partial closure should be fully justified, let's leave it to historian or the jurists in the future. But I would say Iran does have a point in doing whatever it can to expel the invading forces, that's the Americans and the Israelis, who want to really dig the grave for this great civilization. And if they believe that by closing off the Strait of Hormuz, they can really put off all the maximum pressure that they are suffering from, I think no one should really point an accusing finger at it. And I think I completely agree with what the president of Germany said. He said, the best way to lift the closure of the Strait of Hormuz is to stop the war right away. The United States and Israel should stop the war right away rather than dragging their feet to prolong the war, which will further complicate the situation involving the Strait of Hormuz. China called for lifting the closure as soon as possible. But on the other hand, you know, China suffered many wars of aggression before. And we fully want to support any country which wants to defend itself against foreign aggression. And I think closure of the Strait of Hormuz is causing a tremendous amount of pain to China as well as to many other countries. But I think let's put it in real proportion. That is, this closure is caused directly by this war of aggression launched by the United States and Israel against Iran. The best way is to stop the war right now rather than drag it into tomorrow.
How do you see this war changing the world right now? Because I'm curious about China's view on this and if there's been discussions about, and what kind of discussions are being had about how the world is changing, how this war plays a role in it, and of course, how China sees this and participates in these changes.
Well, first of all, I think as a direct consequence of this war of aggression against Iran launched by the United States and Israel, mankind now is the closest to the verge of the outbreak of the Third World War. Why do I say this? Because you remember when President Trump and the United States threatened to send ground troops into Iran for whatever purpose. Fortunately, they have not done so up to today. The Chechen forces declared that they are ready to send the Chechen forces into Iran to fight against the invading foreign aggressors for the sake of Iran. Now, I hope this will not happen. First of all, the Americans will not send ground troops to Iran, and the Chechens will not send their troops into Iran to fight off the Americans. But assume it does happen. That will mean the United States and Russia, through Chechen forces, will be squaring off at each other directly in a war. Now, this will really be unprecedented since the end of the Second World War in 1945. And this will push mankind to the verge of the outbreak of the Third World War. So this is very dangerous. So I hope President Trump will be listening to your interview and will have second thought about doing all these extraordinary things. Now, secondly, if Trump really delivers on his threat, that is to bomb Iran back to Stone Ages, to kill millions of the Iranian people and to destroy the Iranian civilization, if he dares to put this into practice, what will be the direct result? The United States or Israel together may force Iran to come up with a bomb. Can you believe it? They may actually get what they do not want to have, but if they push Iran to the corner, they may come up with something that the United States or Israel may really regret for their life. What if Iran does come up with a weapon and throw it at Israel or at the United States or the military bases of the United States in the Middle East? That's one possibility. Now, secondly, if President Trump is real about destroying this 6,000-year-old civilization and blowing Iran, which is a very big country, 1.6 million square kilometers plus, how can he do it? Does he really want to use a nuclear weapon? Whether the U.S. rules or the constitutional arrangements will allow him to do that, or whether he will find a way to go by these restrictions and still use a bomb. Now, if the United States does use the bomb, I'm pretty sure someone else will use the bomb to counterattack that. That means the use of one single bomb in this war may trigger the use of the second bomb or the third bomb. So even if you survive by not being killed by this nuclear explosion, the subsequent nuclear winter may kill everyone in this world. So I would condemn anyone who wants to use the bomb. the Americans or the Iranians, and they claim they don't have the bomb, or the Israelis, because they do have the bomb, even though they do not tell you. Yeah. So I think we are at a very dangerous moment where three countries at war, US and Israel against Iran, two of them already have nuclear weapons, and Iran doesn't, but Israel has been accusing Iran of working on a bomb for 40 years. So I think the longer this war is prolonged, the closer it will push mankind to the verge of having some kind of nuclear explosion. And once it happens, if it is not Armageddon itself, it will lead mankind to Armageddon.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's a very prudent and relevant, justified warning. Now, I wanted to ask you, though, you know, given everything that you just said, it seems like the Trump administration is doing the opposite of this. Donald Trump himself lashed out at the media saying, don't rush me when asked about, hey, when are negotiations going to start again? You know, Iran is not really interested right now. What's your real deadline? He said, don't rush me. Vietnam was a long war. Iraq was a long war. Not the best examples, I don't think, in U.S. history. But I'm curious of China's view on the Trump administration's approach to this war. And what do you feel like is going to be the long-term consequences for the United States and for the world in which it has tried to make in its image?
Well, I think based on my understanding of the Trump psychology and the circumstances President Trump is faced with, both domestically as well as abroad, there are several things Trump can do. One is to escalate. The other one is cut and run away. Or thirdly, he can redefine the outcome of the war as a complete success for the United States, for himself, etc. Or to really find an excuse and a ladder to climb out of this war. Now, talking about the escalation first, my view is that President Trump and the United States will be damned if it escalates. They will be damned if they don't escalate. Why? If they don't escalate, the United States hegemony in the Middle East, all the images of the United States as an invisible army, for example, will be washed away. But if it does escalate, it will be damned. Why? Because the midterm election is starting very soon, and all the indications seem to indicate that the Republicans may lose either the House of Representatives or even the Senate. If it does happen, President Trump will be a lame duck president on January the 20th, 2027. And he will not be in a position to deliver whatever he promised to those supporters of his, for example. And he may be worried about getting impeached or whatever possibilities that may happen. And if the United States escalates, the oil price will go through the roof, and the Americans most likely will vote with their foot, and the U.S. economy will be plunging into a recession, and it may trigger the financial crisis, which may be one of the largest in scale and in terms of the toxicity, for example. So I think President Trump will be damned if it does escalate, damned if he does not escalate, and how he would balance off this dilemma and get out of it will be probably the biggest challenge President Donald Trump is facing throughout his 80 years of life in this world.
You know, it's bad when the entirety of the mainstream media and even us, we're talking about how can he get out of this, because it doesn't look like there are many or any good options. But one option that he has taken, and I wanted your comment on this, is he has sent another aircraft carrier group over to the region. It'll be all of the aircraft carrier groups at one point or another having participation in this war. But there's been a curious and I think an important point being made all across the, I guess you would call it, the military think tank and industrial complex apparatus. They are talking about how the U.S. has pulled so many resources into the Iran war that they're not going to be ready, and I know you're familiar with this narrative, not going to be ready for the war against China over Taiwan. That's what we're hearing more and more now. I'm wondering what your reaction to that is, because even just the U.S. is very secretive in terms of how much many weapons it has, what it actually produces. But at the same time, there is rising alarms about the U.S. diving so deep into Iran, this war going on for who knows how long, and the U.S., some elements in the U.S. wanting war with China over Taiwan.
Well, first of all, there are people in Washington who keep talking about the destined for war scenario between China and the United States. There was even a very distinguished professor out of Harvard who wrote a book called Destined for War, coming up with a theory called the Two Cities Trap. And many people reading that book concludes that he is talking about a destined for war scenario between China and the United States. I completely disagree with that. I think if anyone tries to apply the Two Cities Trap theory to China and the United States, it is a fallacy. Why? Because the great professor, Graham Allison, analyzed many important cases of war in history, but all the cases of war he analyzed were conventional weapon wars. And he wanted to arrive at his conclusion and try to imply that the conclusion derived from analyzing conventional wars will be applicable to China and the United States. I think that's a fallacy. Professor Graham Allison should tell the Americans, tell the Chinese, tell mankind as a whole that he only analyzed the conventional wars, and the conclusion should be applicable to two conventional weapon countries or one conventional weapon country and another nuclear power, but it will not be applicable to two nuclear power states. That's number one. Number two is that I come up with my own theory. It's called the inevitability of peace between China and the United States. I'll be very brief, but this is a very important point. War by ground forces, by naval forces, or by air forces, or if the United States wants to impose nuclear war on China. No, the United States is not in a position to win a war against China without suffering damages and mortal wounds to itself. Therefore, if you do a cool-headed calculation, you do not want to engage China in a war. I'm completely disagreeing, and I'm even condemning those people agitating for a war between China and the United States, with or without Iran. I do believe in my inevitability of peace between China and the United States. I do believe China and the United States eventually will get along with each other for their mutual good as well as for the benefit of mankind. A war between China and the United States, first of all, will be mutually destructive of China and the United States. Secondly, it will probably waste all the resources, all the wealth, all the riches the United States has been accumulating since the end of the Civil War or since the end of the American-Spanish War of 1898 or since the end of the First World War or the end of the Second World War. So anyone agitating for war launched by the United States against China is really doing the biggest harm to the fundamental interests of the American people as well as the Chinese people. So I see this completely different from the way your question is asked. I see that the United States need to come back to its senses and come back to its sanity of not talking about a war with China and try to engage China in peace, respecting China as China respects the United States, and try to get along with China and never try to impose your God on the Chinese people. And the Chinese people will never impose their God or their Buddha onto the American people. Let's get along with each other rather than go to each other's jugular.
Do you think Trump is going to come in May? That's been all the talk when it comes to, he's been saying that he wants to come to China in May. And I'm curious if you believe that he will, and if the war in Iran, given that Iran is a key strategic partner of China's, and given that just war in general, when a country's in active war and part of that war has some eyes set on China. I'm curious if you believe that Trump will be coming here and welcomed.
Well, I understand that when the Chinese president and the American president met in South Korea last year, they were talking about this upcoming state visit already. And the American side proposed January 2026 for the state visit. The Chinese side probably said, well, January will be too cold. It's due in the middle of the winter. Let's wait until spring. So it was pushed to sometime March. And as the Americans said, March the 29th, is that right? It was postponed because of the war. And the Chinese side is restructuring the timing and the venue of the visit in close consultation with the American side. And I'm personally being approached by major American TV agencies trying to line me up for interviews scheduled for May the 12th, May the 13th, and the May the 14th, because they got the information that for these 3 days, President Trump will be somewhere in China, most likely in Beijing, or maybe in another city. So I think we have greater likelihood of this state visit to take place in the middle of May. And I believe it will be extremely important for the Chinese president and President Trump to meet. And some people may say, well, the United States threatens to blow Iran back to Stone Ages, all these bad things, playing the role of aggressor. Why should China roll out the red carpet to welcome President Trump? I think China's being very philosophical. On the one hand, we support Iran. We condemn the war of aggression. However, we also believe China-US relations are so important. They are probably the most important bilateral relations in the world of today, that it has many other important things to talk about and to take care of, other than the war involving Iran. So I think China will be philosophical enough to compartmentalize the state visit on the one hand and China's position vis-a-vis this war of aggression against Iran, and hopefully the ultimate result will be a positive one, both for China as well as for the United States, and also directly or indirectly positive for Iran. And you may never know, China may actually offer to broker a real deal between the United States and Iran, because I think from the President Trump's perspective, China is the most impactful country in the world. He recognized China as a peer, even though the word they use is a near peer country. And they also fully understand China's very close relations with Iran. So maybe China, in addition to Pakistan, can play the role of real good officers to make both the United States and Iran more comfortable about talking with each other. And this time it may be in China. I hope so. I never know. But if China can pull this off, it will be China's great contribution to peace in this world.
Right. And the United States, the Trump administration has been, and apologies, everyone, my voice is going. I've been doing a lot here in China, but Donald Trump has been talking a very certain kind of way about China recently. And it does seem that there is a shift happening where there is more acknowledgement of China's overall presence and its power and its real ability to assert itself in the way that China wants to assert itself in the world. Given that the United States is at war with Iran now, and we have all this time that you just marked out in the middle of May as possibly him coming, do you see that this war could be over by then? Because there are a lot of problems coming to visit a country like China at war, not just China's view on it, but the fact that that's so soon. And you just outlined earlier the consequences of what happens if the U.S. escalates. And if the war is going on still, it's likely that the U.S. has escalated. So what's your view on this?
Well, I personally hope the war will be over last last week or last month or at least yesterday. The fact that it is still going on is truly a tragedy. And I think even though President Trump wants to end the war, maybe Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel may have all the incentives to sabotage this peace effort. So let's be really honest and very realistic about this. This war needs to end as soon as possible, and the sooner the better. And it will be absolutely in the fundamental interest of the American people to end the war. It will be the interest of the Iranian people. And I personally believe it will also be in the fundamental interest of the Israeli people. Now, whether it will be against the personal interest of Prime Minister Netanyahu, let's leave it aside, for example. So I think the best way is for someone, either the great country of Pakistan, or, for example, as I wish, China, to play very heavy lifting and to pull this off, to create all the conditions that will be necessary to put the United States, and the United States need to really recover and restore the trust that it destroyed by launching this war to start with. And then Iran, on the other hand, and these two countries can really talk with each other about how to end the war, reaching mutually acceptable agreement. Now, I don't think the agreement will be a perfect agreement for either the United States or Iran. Both of them probably will need to make some compromises. But I think a peace with dignity and indecency will be in the best interest of both the Americans as well as the Iranians, and hopefully to lay the foundation of peace and stability in the Middle East.
Mm. Before you came here, Professor Gao, you were at a BRICS forum, and I'm curious on your thoughts on how this war and how just this world is changing a lot. And this war has changed the world quite dramatically. And of course, China is always in the discussions about the world changing because China is changing very rapidly. It's growing rapidly. It's becoming more and more assertive, more and more powerful. There's a, you know, every time I come here, there's a growing confidence here that you can always feel and you can see. So maybe you can comment on where you see the world going and changing, and what's China's role in this, and how has the war contributed to this change for the better or for worse?
Well, my feeling is that when history looks back at the year 2026, most likely it will mark the year 2026 as the beginning of the end of Pax Americana, because the United States is doing so many things that become very much not only controversial, but highly kind of a questionable. For example, President Trump picks up a fight with His Holiness the Pope. Why? Why picking up a
Forgot
fight
about
with
that
the Pope?
One. You
know, why? I simply cannot understand. And why should President Trump say things as to blow Iran back to stone ages? How can anyone think about that? How can anyone in this world think about or talk about destroying a 6,000-year-old civilization? You cannot do that. And how can you really hold a gun, pointing the gun at the head of so many other countries? Now, he's picking up a fight with Britain, with Spain, with Germany, with France, with Italy, with so many other countries. So I think based on the Chinese philosophical thinking, if someone is alienating himself and finding enemies everywhere in all the corners, well, he's in real danger, is that right? So I think probably the United States is suffering a free fall from the top of the mountain to the abyss of the rule of the jungle, and they are destroying trust. Any country would have held for the Americans or for the United States, and Pax Americana is coming to an end. Now, whatever President Trump is doing may accelerate the end of Pax Americana. That's the problem. Whether the midterm election will make another watershed moment, whether the United States will recollect its sanity and the rationality, not to talk about war all the time, and try to really devote itself to peace and stability, I hope the Americans will have that courage and wisdom, because otherwise I really worry that the year 2026 will be the beginning of the end of Pax Americana. And if you use this kind of analysis, then everything will come into line, because you see the energy crisis, you see the economic crisis, you see the most likely the upcoming financial crisis, you see the rebellion of the American people against this war, you see Republicans losing the midterm election, for example, and most likely the Republican will lose the general election in 2028.
Yeah.
And this does not bode well, because the world now needs stability. The world needs some country, for example, the United States, which has rationality and sanity and statesmanship and leadership. You cannot play around like a spoiled kid in a China shop pretending to be a bull, because that probably will be the end of sanity for mankind.
Yes, great points. And maybe you can talk about how China is building trust in the world, because everything you just outlined underscores exactly the U.S. is sowing incredible distrust in it, in the United States. The U.S.'s position in the world has fallen so far, even in just that this 8 week or so since February 28th, war on Iran. You have mainstream media, New York Times, talking about Iran as being another global power now, and that shifts things dramatically. But China has been considered a powerful country for quite a long time now, but never the words trust uttered in the Western mainstream media when it comes to China. Usually Americans are taught China is to be distrusted or mistrusted. But how is China sowing seeds of trust around the world, and how does it differ from how the United States right now is behaving?
Well, before I answer your important question, let me just have a very quick word about Iran. I think, based on my limited knowledge about war, military warfare, the way President Trump is fighting this war against Iran demonstrates that he doesn't know himself and he doesn't know the enemy. Because in Sun Tzu, in The Art of War, the most important thing is you need to know yourself and know the other side before you do anything in the right. He doesn't know Iranians. He probably thought the Iranians will unconditionally surrender or will kowtow immediately after he bombed Iran. No, the Iranians recollected their wits and strengthened their courage, and now putting a very heroic fight against the Americans. And President Trump probably never expected that Iran could have lasted this long and inflicted so much harm to the Americans. And the number of the American soldiers killed and wounded is actually shocking, because you are talking about so many people dead or so many people wounded, some with mortal wounds. I don't think the American families would be very happy about it. So I think President Trump really need to understand Iran as it is, really try to reach the level of understanding the other side as well as itself. Now for China, allow me to make one point. You may remember a few years ago, China brokered a deal between Iran and the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia.
Yes.
And the two countries shook hands and agreed to cooperate on many things, despite all their hostility against each other for decades, if not for centuries. So that means when China is involved, even the worst hostile parties against each other may shake hands and may embrace each other and may talk about peace and cooperation. Well, when the United States and Israel get involved, Iran and Saudi Arabia get to each other's jugular. They bomb each other. They threaten war against each other. So the point is only one. China advocates for peace, and the United States, in this particular case, destroys peace. Now, if you believe the Iranians don't have their own eyes and the Arabs don't have their own eyes, no. When the dust settles, they will know which country really cares about peace and stability in that region, which country keeps talking about peace, partnership, cooperation, giving up their animosity over the decades, for example, if not over the centuries, and which countries are talking about conspiracies, plundering resources, and fighting a war, using your country as the launch pad for war against the other side, and eventually you alienate yourself and you alienate the Arabs against the Iranians, for example, and then eventually the whole region plunge into chaos. So I think this is the way China is building up trust. China is always the long-term observer of the situation in the world, and China always aims for the long term. We look forward, not only in terms of 5 years or 10 years, we look forward minimum 50 years, sometimes 100 years. In my case, I'm thinking about the year 7025. That is 5,000 years of reciprocal tariff war in 2025 against China and almost the rest of the world. I thought from the very beginning this was an illegal tariff war. It's an unconstitutional tariff war based on my education of law at Yale Law School. I concluded from day one it could not work, and the United States cannot destroy free trade and become the champion for the freedom of mankind. So I think President Trump and his government should really come to their sanity. They should really think about how they can serve the fundamental interest of the American people before they try to destroy all the other countries by war after war after war. In this world, imperialism is already dead. Don't try to revive or resuscitate imperialism. It's not going to work. You really need to embrace free trade, defend market economy, and treat all the countries, big or small, as an equal, and never threaten to destroy a 6,000-year-old civilization.
Hmm. Yeah, and in the last few minutes we have here, I believe, yeah, we have about 5-10 minutes left, I wanted to maybe ask you if you could elaborate on that last point you made, a 5,000 to 6,000-year civilization of Iran. And China has been talking a lot about, in it, especially in its recent course of development, its connections to its own civilization, its long history, 5,000-plus years. What do you think that kind of history contributes to each respective country and their relationship, given that the United States is a much younger country and ostensibly also a much darker history in a lot of ways? Maybe you could help the audience understand why this kind of history is important to understand what's happening right now.
Well, I think in China we keep talking about our 5,000 years of written history, for example, and the actual history is much longer than the 5,000 years. But I think one thing which sets China apart from many other countries is that throughout our history, we always believe war should be the last resort, meaning you need to exhaust all the other evidence before you launch a war. Because war in China is considered as something like an evil thing. Because war, once you launch a war, well, life will be lost, properties will be destroyed, and eventually the fate of your country may be spoiled. Is that right? So war needs to be waged back and forth, up and down, inside and outside, very, very carefully. And if you want to launch a war, you need to have full legal and moral justification to launch the war. You need to be on the right side of history. So you need to really split everything, leave no stone unturned to do your analysis, to do your preparation, and to do your justification before you launch the war. But the United States seems to, shoot from the hip and very eager to use war as the top priority to solve whatever problems they may run into. This is a major difference. I hope China and the United States can sit down and talk about peace and launching no war, not only against each other, but against many other countries in the world. Further, I think China looks into the future with a long-term view. Allow me to mention one thing. This year, 2026, is the first year of the 15th five-year plan. Mm-hmm. Now, back in 1955, Chairman Mao Zedong was talking about maybe by the 15th five-year plan, Chinese economy may surpass, may catch up, if not surpass, the United States. And lo and behold, this is exactly what's happening.
Yep.
So Mao Zedong, back in 1955, was already prophesizing correctly what would happen in 2026 at the beginning of the 15th five-year plan. Now, this really is something, because I don't think the Americans will be able to think that long term or plan that long term. And in China, we do have the long-term vision, and we do see into the future in terms of 100-year, 200-year, if not 500-year. And as I mentioned, probably with a little bit of exaggeration, starting from 2025, which I believed was a watershed year, I think about 5,000 years. Because you may remember when the Americans tried to push China down with maximum amount of tariff, I said, no, we don't care, we don't care, we don't care, because China has been surviving for 5,000 years, and much of the time there was no United States, and we still survive. If the United States wants to bully China, if the United States wants to lock itself out from the largest market in the world, that's the Chinese market, we, the Chinese, are already prepared to live for another 5,000 years without the United States, and we expect to survive. Now, this is not blowing something out of proportion. I say this with full confidence that if the United States wants to be an enemy of China, it will not succeed. Eventually, they need to come back to China, talk about peace with China, inevitability of peace. Again, in this war against Iran, I hope eventually the American people and the Iranian people will sit down and look at each other and say, oh, we are not enemies, you know, we are not devils against each other. We can be just normal human beings. We can recognize each other. We are different, of course, but we can get along. And this hopefully will happen despite of all the conspiracies being spilled around by another country or another regime or another prime minister. This is crucially important. The United States, the American people on the one hand, and Iran and the Iranian people need to use their own brain to come up with their own conclusion that the United States and Iran are not enemies with each other. And they can get along with each other despite of their differences, and both of them should resist the temptation of war as being concocted by someone else.
Yeah, and maybe on that note, your final word on this, I think we talked about a lot today. We covered a whole lot of ground. Maybe your reaction to a final thought that I had about everything that you just said about China's five-year plan, its long-term vision, how it approaches the world situation. A lot of people in the United States have a hard time with this because they are often told that essentially China is its own version of the United States. Essentially, it's aggressive, and it's causing so many problems for countries around the world just in its own form. And so I'm curious if you could react to this in light of the fact that, you know, I think we're seeing with this blockade in this war in Iran that it's really hard to equalize China and the United States in terms of how they behave in the world, their overall approach to the world, because hopefully people with eyes can see that China is not blockading Cuba, it's not blockading Iran, it's not blockading Venezuela, it's not trying to choke trade routes. So your reaction to the assumption, right? We even had an Economist article recently that said China's ethnic policy around its ethnic minorities is squashing all but one, right? Of course, Han Chinese. So these are the messages people are getting. And I'm curious if you could just react to that as we close up here.
Well, thank you for giving me a minute to talk about this. I think ever since 1978, China has been practicing what we call socialism with Chinese characteristics. And this is the recipe leading to tremendous amount of transformation of China, both economically speaking as well as politically speaking. But over the decades, over the past one decade or so, the Americans try their best to come up with a label and put it on China. They come up with all kinds of labels like authoritarianism, totalitarianism, or even worse labels. None of them apply to China. And then a few years ago, the Americans thought they found the right label. It's called a state capitalism. They describe China as if China has been practicing state capitalism since 1978. To such an extent, some Americans say, if state capitalism can generate economic miracles for China, we should practice state capitalism. Now, allow me to mention several things. One is that China never practiced state capitalism and will never practice state capitalism. Secondly, China has been practicing socialism with Chinese characteristics. Now, thirdly, I do believe state capitalism will never save the United States. So don't try that. Fourthly, if I have a chance through your platform to offer free advice to President Trump, I would say, President Trump, my proposal is that the United States should practice capitalism with American characteristics. Really, just as the Chinese are practicing socialism with Chinese characteristics and generate miracles, the Americans should practice capitalism with American characteristics, which I believe will generate miracles for the Americans, which will really MAGA, which will make America great again. Now, what is capitalism with American characteristics? It has a long list, but let me be very short. First of all, you need to defend free trade. You cannot destroy free trade. Secondly, you need to protect the market economy. Don't let the state or the government intervene too much in the private practice of economy. Thirdly, you need to respect universities. Let universities be universities. Let Harvard be Harvard. Let Columbia be Columbia, rather than try to force some of the best universities to do what they do not want to do. Now, the other thing is equally important. And if President Trump and his advisors can listen to me, they probably can really save America. That is, despite of all your military might, you need to treat all the countries in the world, big or small, as equal. You cannot just lecture them. You cannot just impose your version of the truth on them. You need to let them be whatever they want to be. You do not want to impose your version of the truth on to anyone else. Don't do unto others what you do not want others to do unto you. That will pave the way for the revitalization of the United States. That will restore all the dignity and the decency and the morality for the American as a country. And that will restore the magnetism of the United States for not only talents from other countries, but wealth willingly coming to American shore. And I think manufacturing jobs will come back to the United States. Because otherwise, if the United States tries to do state capitalism, it's a dead end. If the United States wants to practice imperialism or super imperialism or hyper imperialism, it's dead before it started. So think about capitalism with American characteristics, which in my view will MAGA, will make America great again.
I think it's a great place to close, Professor Victor Gao. Thank you so much for joining me today. It was wonderful
It's a great honor.
I want to make sure everyone knows that this was a live conversation here in China. Victor was so generous to give us his time today, a whole hour. So do hit the like button. That will really help continue this conversation forward in the YouTube algorithm. And I will be back again soon.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
It was great.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. Everyone. Bye-bye.